Welcome to the Life After Sugar podcast, the podcast that's not just about sugar, but about your relationship with it and also with food and especially with yourself. So if you want to discover your life after sugar and hear inspiring stories from all kinds of people who also cut out sugar in their way, at their pace, for their own reasons, this is the podcast for you. Because you know, when you take away the sugar, you can finally discover the real sweetness in your life. I'm your host, Netta Gorman. And today I'm talking with Sarah, who's actually a colleague of mine at the college where we teach English as a second language in French-speaking Quebec in Canada. And I've known Sarah for several years, even though she's a lot younger than me. And as friends, we've often talked about diet and, of course, sugar. And at one point I said to her, you know what? I think you'd make a great guest on the Life After Sugar podcast. And luckily, she said yes. And we had a fantastic chat about her background with food, sugar, her eating disorder, as well as her outlook towards her horses, her dogs, her baby, because Sarah's a new mom, and especially herself. We'll get to our chat in just a minute. But first, I just wanted to tell you that if you're looking for some free resources about how to get rid of cravings, then I have plenty for you. Come check out the Life After Sugar Facebook page and subscribe to the Life After Sugar YouTube channel, as well as my Instagram account at My Life After Sugar, which is where you'll get all kinds of inspiration so that you can see that it's perfectly possible to live a happy and active life, even if you don't eat sugar. You can also check out my TikTok account at Netta_LifeAfterSugar. And you can also download my 5 tips to start getting rid of cravings. Look in the description in the show notes along with this episode. All right, so today I'm talking with Sarah, who is actually a colleague of mine at the college where I teach English as a second language in Quebec in Canada. And Sarah is 32, could be my daughter, but we are colleagues. And Sarah, I'd like to ask you just to tell us a little bit about your background with food, with sugar, and with your relationship with yourself.
All right. So for me, when I started cutting down sugar, that was a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, it was mostly coming from a place of, it was mostly about weight. And I should preface this by saying that I suffered from eating disorders as a teenager, body dysmorphia as well. And that's, you know, everyone going through that kind of experience knows that it never really goes away. It's always something that you're fighting through and battling with. So that's what it was about for me 5 years ago. It was mostly about losing weight. And I wasn't that big or anything. It was, you know, I was at a very healthy weight, but I still wanted to lose the weight. So that's how it started. And 2 years ago, I got pregnant. And so the hormones made it difficult for me to continue with the, you know, eating well and all that. So
how did you feel about yourself when you were struggling with an eating disorder in your teens?
Well, it never felt good. You know, it's, you never feel good about yourself. You always feel like you want more. You should lose a bit more weight. You're really harsh on yourself because every time you eat something, especially if you binge eat, for example, and then you feel really bad about yourself. So that's what I went through for a couple of years when I was a teen. So it didn't feel good, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And what kind of put a stop to it, or at least what halted it? Do you know?
I think having a healthier approach towards food and getting older. I worked really hard on accepting myself, accepting my body. So that was a whole journey throughout my 20s. And now in my 30s, it's a whole new level. It's a whole new challenge because especially after pregnancy, your body changes. And like I said, the hormones were just raging and I was eating way more sugar than I wanted to. And that was really hard on me as well because I felt like a failure. I didn't feel good about myself because I kept thinking, you know, before I was pregnant, I was super healthy, eating very little sugar. And then, you know, towards the end of the pregnancy and afterwards, you know, you have a baby to take care of and all that. So I didn't pay a lot of attention to my diet. And, you know, you eat whatever you can find because you're so exhausted. You don't feel like cooking healthy meals and all that. And so it took me a lot of time to shed the weight, the baby weight. And so I felt like a failure, basically, because I kept thinking I should be losing weight faster than this. So it's been a journey the past 2 years, just focusing on being healthy rather than losing weight and going back to my pre-baby low sugar diet, if I can put it that way. And being lenient also towards myself, just, you know, just focusing on health rather than weight and accepting that it takes time and that your body changes and that it's fine. You know, it's been a whole journey of accepting my post baby body.
Yeah.
So it's more about the health now than about the weight itself, if that makes sense.
Oh, totally makes sense. And, you know, I've known you for several years. So we've been colleagues and friends from before your baby, before you got pregnant, and now. And between you and me, I can't see any difference in your body or how you look, but that's just from the outside, right?
I know. And we're so tough on ourselves. We're so good at criticizing every little thing that nobody else sees, really. So it's a whole journey of accepting yourself, and no matter what weight you're at. I remember when I was a teenager, at one point I weighed, I don't know, I don't remember, 105 pounds. I'm thin now and I'm at 135. So can you imagine 30 pounds lighter?
Wow.
I was very, very skinny and I still thought I was fat. So is that social pressure? Is that, pressure on ourselves? Where does that come from? I'm not really sure. Maybe it's all of these things mixed together. But, you know, people suffering from eating disorders, it's not the body that's the problem in itself, you know?
Yeah. Yes. It's very often, and I, you know, I'm not an expert in eating disorders, but it seems to be often a case of feeling you need to be in control of something in your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not saying that's everybody's experience, but that's, you know, everything I'm saying today, that's just my, I guess people can experience eating disorders in many different ways, but that's what it was for me anyway. So feeling in control. So cutting down sugar was a way for me to feel in control. So that's what it was mostly about at first. But I'm kind of happy. I'm really happy that I'm letting go of that and focusing more on being healthy and eating well. And being lenient also with myself, thinking, you know, if I do eat more sugar one day, that's fine. You know, it's fine. I'll try to do better tomorrow, next week, whatever. You know, progress is what's important. That's the way I see it now.
Yeah.
I used to feel like if one day I really felt like eating cake or something, and if I did eat it, it was a big failure. And then I would punish myself for days. You know, starving and not eating as much as I should. So that's not what I'm doing anymore. So I'm really happy that I've been able to change and grow and, you know, focus more on health rather than just weight.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not like you need to come and seek me out at the college where we work together and confess that you ate cake. Because honestly, I don't care. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know. I know. I know. I know. But like I said, we're our toughest judges. We're so harsh with ourselves. Crazy, eh?
Yeah, it is crazy. And, you know, and it's understandably crazy in the sense that we all do it to lesser or greater extent, you know, whether or not we have eating disorders. But my question to you at the moment is, did your eating disorder include punishing yourself by not eating sugar? Is that what I'm understanding?
I don't know if it was necessarily I don't think that's the way I saw it at the time. I didn't see it because you're in denial, right? You don't think you have an eating disorder. So I was basically lying to myself and saying, oh no, it's just about being healthy. But it was about the weight, right? So I don't know if that's the way I was feeling at the time. I definitely wasn't telling myself, oh, I'm going to punish myself by not eating sugar. So it was more about control and losing weight. And all that. But looking back, I definitely feel like, yeah, I was punishing myself in many ways for eating too much or too much sugar or not eating well. Or if we had, for example, a birthday party and I would eat cake, then I would tell myself, okay, you're not allowed to eat any cake for a month now because you had cake yesterday. So
yeah,
looking back, it really was punishing myself, but I don't think I realized at the time that that's what it was. Is that making any sense?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It makes total sense. Yes, it does. And so there's one side of things that I talk about on this podcast about breaking free from the hold that sugar has on us and finding freedom from cravings and all these sort of positive words, freedom and, you know, feeling good about yourself so that you don't have to turn to sugar to make you feel good. And all these kinds of messages in my podcast are positive ones. I'm hoping that's coming through in all these podcast episodes. And what I'm hearing from you is that you can also take the very same substance, sugar, and turn it into a negative thing against yourself. No, and I'm not judging you here. I'm just saying we can take the same element and turn it positive or negative.
And it's all a question of perspective, I think.
Question of perspective and what our sort of goal is at the end of the day. And I wanted to talk about this positive negative thing with you because I know you, and I know that you're a big lover of horses and of positive reinforcement for your horses.
Yes, yeah.
And it's almost as if, you know, you are willing to treat your horses with all the positivity in the world, but when it comes to yourself, out comes the negative.
It is true, isn't it? Don't we all do that? Don't we all do that? And that's exactly what we were talking about before we recorded the podcast, because we do talk a lot.
Yep.
I feel like, especially, you know, I was talking about my baby before in pregnancy, and I feel like as mothers, we tend to put our baby before ourselves, our baby's needs, our partner's needs, even in my case, my dog's needs, my horse's needs. Like, has my baby had, you know, enough vegetables today and healthy snacks? And you know, my dogs have very expensive food, and the horses, have they had, you know, all their supplements today and vitamins and, you know, high quality hay to eat. But then for myself, you know, I don't have the energy or the desire to make, you know, something for lunch. So I'm just going to eat a bag of chips for lunch.
Yeah.
But we're putting ourselves last, and that's not how it should be. I feel like, and maybe that's, again, a social thing that, you know, we think mothers should be, or anyone really, should put others' needs before yours, which shouldn't be. You should be your own priority.
It's very difficult to put that into practice.
And we should be definitely more positive towards ourselves. And like you said, I'm all about positive reinforcement with my child, with my dogs and horses. And focusing on the good rather than the bad. And that's what I like about that approach. But then I'm just so harsh towards myself, which makes no sense, you know?
Well, it's I'm sure that people listening can relate, especially women. I don't want to be sexist about it, but it seems to me that women, especially mothers, have this knack of putting ourselves at the bottom of our list of priorities. And
Yeah.
I mentioned your baby, your horses, your dogs, and I would add to that list our students who we teach at our college. We have like dozens, if not over 100 students every semester. And aren't we there to give them positive reinforcement as well?
Yeah, true, definitely.
You know, they conjugate a verb correctly, and we're like, it's a big party.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then here we are, as you said, after we've looked after everyone else, after we've given them all the positive vibes, there's none left for ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Because either because we're exhausted, because we just don't have the time, maybe a mix of both, but definitely we put ourselves last, and that's not the way it should be.
Now, look, I remember when I was giving workshops, in-person workshops at our college a few years ago, I was giving them in French, right? And you came to a few of them
Yeah,
about sugar.
back when you were starting out. Oh,
You knew me then.
it feels like such a long time ago, but it was just a couple of years ago.
It was, I think, like to 2018 or 2019 or
Yeah,
around.
something like that. Yeah.
So why, can I ask? And we'll get back to your horses a bit later, I promise. That's
Thank you. You know, that's all I want to talk
all you
about.
care about. We're going to talk about humans just for a second. Can
Okay.
I ask you, why did you decide to come to those workshops about metabolism and sugar and all that stuff?
Because again, coming from a place of eating disorders and body dysmorphia, I saw that as a way, because I tried when I was younger, I tried, not that I'm really old now, but I tried every possible diet, Weight Watchers. I don't remember all of the diets that I tried, but cutting this out, cutting that out, no fat, you name it, I tried it. And it was all about losing weight. So, and I didn't succeed ever because, you talk about that a lot, how diets are toxic and they don't necessarily help you, or you do lose the weight but then you gain it all back. So that was my situation for a couple of years, and they're so hard to maintain, right? They're usually so restrictive. So you do it for a month, 2 months, you lose a bit of weight but then you gain it all back, or you gain even more. So you're kind of yo-yoing, up and down, up and down. So I saw it as sort of a last resort. So I was like, oh, okay, cutting out sugar, that's something that I've never tried. Maybe it's going to work. So the way I saw it at the time was sort of like another diet to try. So that was my approach. That was my way of seeing it, coming, like I said, from a place of eating disorders. So it wasn't the healthiest way to start. And like I said, I'm really happy that it's, throughout the years, it's turned into more of a health approach rather than just weight loss approach.
Okay, all right. I'm happy to hear that because I'm curious to know what now, with a bit of hindsight, what difference you can see between how you approached cutting out sugar in the context of an eating disorder that I think you did when you were a lot younger, and now, like cutting out sugar, or I would use a more sort of neutral term, just eating less sugar in a more positive outlook. Can you tell us about that difference of approach for you?
So like I said, I no longer focus on the weight. I no longer weigh myself. I focus on feeling good, having energy, and I'm also more lenient with myself. I no longer punish myself, or I'm trying to be as positive as I can, and I no longer calculate everything that I eat or the grams of sugar that I eat. So I think that makes it a more healthy way of eating. in general, just eat, I'm just focusing on eating less sugar, not necessarily eating no sugar at all. Yeah. Like I said, being positive with myself and accepting that sometimes I will be tempted to eat cake and sometimes I will eat cake and that's fine, you know? And it's about being mentally healthy, I think, as well. So no longer feeling fat all the time and ugly all the time and, you know, hitting myself on the head every time I did something that I didn't think was acceptable, like eating cake or anything. We're just reusing that example over and over, but I mean, it's just an easy example.
Yeah.
So just little things in my everyday life that I don't know if it's, how can I put this? I don't know if they're big things necessarily, just teeny tiny little things here and there that I do that have helped me change my perspective.
Yeah. I think it's those teeny tiny little things that are the big things.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's how it's been for me anyway.
I just want to take a quick break to say that if this is your first time here, then welcome and thank you for listening to this podcast. And whether you're new or a regular, and you haven't yet rated or reviewed this podcast, could I ask you to scroll down and tap on the stars to rate this podcast and also to write a short review to let me know how this podcast is helping you in your life after sugar. I love reading your reviews. And when you rate and review this podcast, not only does it encourage me to continue making new episodes, but it also helps to share this podcast and have more people see it so that we can help more people feel better and lose weight with less sugar. So again, thank you for rating and reviewing this podcast and for spreading the word about sugar. That is very powerful because you have taken, as far as I can tell, you've taken the same actual, objectively speaking, the same steps or the same actions of, let's say, reducing sugar and gone from a negative outlook to a positive outlook. And I'm guessing from what I can tell, from what I know of you, you feel better for it.
Definitely, definitely. Physically, mentally, I'm at a much better place in my life. And like I said, after pregnancy, your body changes, the hormones, you know, I had such cravings when I was pregnant. I had sugar cravings all the time.
I remember.
Oh, it was crazy. So for me, it's just been a journey of accepting myself, accepting my body, being mentally healthy, physically healthy, no matter the weight, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And as you said, you were never overweight to begin with.
No, never. So it was just all in my head. And that's the way it is with eating disorders. You know, it's not your body that's the problem. It's your perception of your own body.
Yeah.
How you think your body should look.
Right. And the pressure is so strong, especially in our 20s and even 30s. And I think you're at a place in your early 30s where most of us still haven't got there in our 50s and 60s, quite frankly. So you're way ahead of us. You know, and it's probably because you attended my workshops, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Exactly.
So I want to come back to your horses. Would you like that?
Yay. Of course I'd like that.
Can you explain to us how you treat your horses?
Okay. We could talk about that for hours and hours.
Keep it down to 5 minutes.
Okay. Oh, that's going to be hard. So to make a long story short, I've had horses for about 15 years now, 13 years, I think. And like everybody, I started in a traditional mindset of training horses. So that means usually harsh methods, focusing on punishment, what we call negative reinforcement, so pressure and release, so mostly working with aversives. And I had that one horse a couple of years ago. He was probably trained too young. He had physical problems, you know, anyway, all sorts of things. And I didn't have a choice but to try. It was my last resort. My last hope was using positive reinforcement. So clicker training, I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's really popular in the dog world. So you're using a clicker. And then when the animal performs the behavior that you want, you click and then you reinforce, usually with food. That's what works best. So my horses are all trained with positive reinforcement, as little aversives as I can. No pressure and release, no punishment. And it's all about setting up the environment. So that's what, you know, that's setting up not only yourself, but your animal for success. So first of all, fulfilling the basic needs, mental need, nutritional needs, physical needs, and then setting up the environment to, you know, so that everyone's in a position of success. And then you train in a positive way by, you know, reinforcing, rewarding the behaviors that you want to see in the animal, rather than just focusing on punishing the behaviors that you don't want to see.
Yeah.
So that's basically what it is in a couple of minutes. We could talk about this for hours, but I bet you could.
I'm just sitting here listening. Well, look, you know, if we replaced horse / dog / animal with yourself, everything you just described as applied to yourself.
And applies to ourselves, you know, that's the crazy thing. And I never caught on. It never dawned on me that I could be lenient and positive towards myself as well.
Yeah. Yes. You know, in my program that I teach, the Freedom from Cravings Formula program, it's called, I have an exercise for my students to treat themselves as they would a friend, right? Now, we're friends. Would you ever, or maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot here. Would you ever, I'm not sure I want to know your answer. I'm skating around the question. Okay, here goes. Would you ever talk to me or treat me as your friend the way that you talk to yourself or you treat yourself or did in the past?
No, never, never. And I would never want a friend to think like that and treat themselves like that, you know?
Yeah. And yet you did it for years and years for yourself.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And don't worry, you're not the only one. Believe me, ask me how I know. And, you know, the exercise that I call treat yourself as you would a friend, I would say to someone like you, treat yourself as you would your dog. Treat yourself as you would your horse. Treat yourself as you would your baby. And, you know, and it's like we treat ourselves in the worst possible way. And very often we use sugar to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a coping mechanism.
Coping mechanism so that we don't actually have to cope. It's just a way to not cope, actually, in my experience. And I often say that if sugar makes you feel bad, then not eating sugar is a form of self-care rather than a form of punishment, because you're taking away that element that makes you feel bad. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah.
So many people think that when you don't eat sugar, like myself, and to a certain degree yourself, then in some way you're punishing yourself. It's a life of self-denial. And I'm like, but have you ever met me? Like, do I come across as someone who is living a life of self-denial because I don't eat sugar?
I think it all has to do with your perspective and also where you're at mentally. So for me, it was, like I said, it was for years
yeah
a way of punishing myself. And it can definitely be, but then again, I wasn't in the healthiest place, mentally speaking. So I guess it all depends on your perspective and the way you feel and, you know.
Yeah, totally. And so, and also our perspective, in my experience, comes from our life experience. So if we've always experienced negativity towards ourselves, then we're likely to see other people who are doing the same actions. You know, there you were denying yourself sugar as a punishment. And then, you know, you can see someone else who's not eating sugar and just assume that they're also denying themselves as a punishment.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's the way it is for everybody. I'm just saying that was my experience.
Yeah.
As it no longer is, that's not the way it is anymore, but it definitely was for me for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yes. And I think it's really interesting that you're so invested in this approach of positive reinforcement for your horses and your dogs, you know, and your baby.
Yeah.
That I'm happy to hear that you're also applying it to yourself now that you're slightly older and more experienced.
Yeah, experienced. Oh, that's a good word. That's cute. I prefer that to older. More, I have more life experience now.
You do?
Yeah, and definitely it doesn't seem like dieting and horse training have a lot in common, but as we were talking about before, they kind of do in many ways, in the sense that I came from a place of training my animals in a really harsh way, and it's always your fault. You should be like, traditional training focuses on things that are not necessarily scientifically approved, such as, you know, being dominant, being really harsh. And if your animal is not cooperating, it's because you're not harsh enough, you're not strict enough, you're not dominant enough, you should be more strict, and all that. So it puts you in a place of failure all the time. And I used to feel like a failure for not having perfectly behaved animals, you know? And that's the way I see diet culture as well, in so many ways. And having been through that, dieting for years and years and never succeeding, you're always in a state of failure. You're never good enough. You should always eat less, exercise more. There's no end to it. There's no
There's
end
no
to it.
end
And
to it.
you can't succeed. It's like you can't succeed, and yet you beat yourself up for not succeeding, you know?
Yep.
Whereas today, I feel like, if we're continuing on the whole thing with the horses, you know, I focus on what they're doing well rather than what they're not doing well. And if it doesn't work out, it's like, okay, we'll take a break. We'll think about what we could do better, how to improve. I listen to a lot of horse podcasts and read a lot of horse books, and it's all about gaining knowledge and improving. And it's been so good for me. It's been so good for me. I've had more success with my horses, and I'm also in a more positive state of mind. And that's the way it is with diet as well, I feel. So again, setting myself up for success rather than just beating myself up for every time I had what I would see then as a failure, but it really wasn't. It's not necessarily a failure. We think it's a failure, but it's not.
Yeah, and we're teachers. Our whole career revolves around our student success.
Exactly. And as teachers as well, there's also a parallel there that we could talk about, is that I remember when I started teaching a couple of years ago, I thought I was so good. I was like, wow, I'm the best teacher in the world. Now, looking back, I'm looking at, you know, things that I did in the classroom a couple of years ago, and I'm like, wow, that was not good. But then again, what matters is that and I'm sure you feel the same, right? Were you a good teacher 30 years ago?
Oh
Probably not.
no, I was awful.
Probably not. You were probably not very, you thought you were so good, but you
Right.
probably weren't that good. You probably weren't all that.
I
So,
wasn't.
you know, so it's all the same in so many aspects of our lives, and teaching is one of them. We all grow and we all improve, and it's all about being better than you were last year, 5 years ago, 10, 20, 30 years ago. So it's all about improvement and being lenient, you know, accepting that we're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. You probably still make mistakes 30 years on, you know, and that's fine. And it's fine, you know, and I feel like diet is the same, and the whole sugar journey should be the same anyway.
Absolutely. You know? I agree. You know, it's basically eat sugar, don't eat sugar. That's not what the point is anyway.
Right? No, exactly. There has to be, we have to celebrate success, set ourselves up for success and celebrate that, and focus on what we're doing right, you know, as opposed to just being so harsh on ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. One last question about your horses, Sarah.
Okay. Sure.
Don't we give sugar cubes to horses as a reward?
No, 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 no. Horses are actually very sensitive to sugar. So they should have a very, very low sugar, low starch diet. Yeah. So no sugar cubes for horses, no cereal. No, I don't even give, like, I do sometimes give carrots and apples, but very, very little, because I have horses that founder, they have a tendency to have laminitis. So that's, I'll try to explain it very simply. It's swelling in the hooves because of sugar in the blood. So we always say that horses have five hearts. So a lot of blood goes through the hooves, the legs and the hooves, and the hooves sort of pump blood, if I can put it that way. So when there's too much sugar in their blood, the hooves, there's a part of the hooves that tends to swell, which I can let you imagine how painful that is.
Yeah.
So we no sugar cubes to horses, as little sugar as possible. So
you heard it here first. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a horse nutritionist or anything, but I think it's just a kind of a rule of thumb that, you know, horses should eat as little sugar as possible.
Yeah, well, it makes sense to me, that's for sure. That's for sure. All right, Sarah, thank you ever so much. I really appreciate it. And we'll get together for coffee soon at the college, right?
Yes, definitely. All right.
Thanks
for having me. Bye.
Bye. Oh, I really love this conversation with Sarah, not just because she's my friend and my colleague, and we often have some really interesting conversations about teaching, about sugar, about parenting, and everything in between. But what I love about Sarah's outlook is just how aware she is. At such a young age, or at least early 30s seems pretty young to me, I certainly wasn't that aware at that age. And what I mean by that awareness is that now Sarah can see that her outlook has made a 180 degree turn from punishing herself by not eating sugar to making a reduction in sugar a form of self-care for her. And I think that's a wonderful way of seeing things, because as Sarah was saying, society in general tends to think that when you reduce or cut sugar, it's some kind of punishment. But actually, you're in charge of how you see sugar and how you see your own worth. And if reducing or cutting sugar is a way to look after yourself, then there's no self-denial and no punishment. Quite the opposite, in fact. And so learning to treat ourselves like we would a friend, or a horse, or a dog, or our baby, is what life after sugar is all about. It's about finding the real sweetness in your life. And yes, I admit it, that's easier said than done, which is why I created the After Sugar Club, which is a private, friendly, and encouraging community that's not on Facebook, where you'll get the support and the encouragement you need to take your first steps to get rid of cravings and live a joyful life without needing sugar. For a small monthly membership fee, you'll get access to an exclusive library of resources to help you start living your craving-free life with confidence. Plus, you'll be able to attend our twice-monthly support calls with me in a small group of like-minded members. You can join the After Sugar Club at any time and stay as long as you want to. To join us in the After Sugar Club, go to aftersugarclub.com and click in the top menu on After Sugar Club. You can also look in the show notes along with this episode and click on the link there to join the After Sugar Club. And if you want more personalized guidance from me, as well as weekly accountability calls, so that you too can get rid of cravings, slim down, and finally feel in control around food, especially sugar, then the 90-day program Freedom from Cravings Formula could be just the thing for you. And when you join the Freedom from Cravings Formula 90-day program, as a special bonus, you'll have unlimited access to the After Sugar Club, free of charge, for a whole year. The Freedom from Cravings Formula program opens a few times a year, and if you're on my mailing list, you'll be the first to know when registrations open again. To join the program, all you have to do is to book a clarity call with me so that we can talk about your specific needs and whether the program is a good fit for you. Go to aftersugarclub.com to see everything that's included in the program and to schedule a clarity call with me.
That's it for this week. Keep in touch and see you soon for another episode.